Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. As part of Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month in November, Dr. Tanya Spakai-Saab from Mayo Clinic in Arizona gave an overview of current developments in the pancreatic cancer field and outlined the potential next steps for further improving patient outcomes. Specifically, he detailed the currently available chemotherapy options for patients with metastatic disease, novel therapeutic approaches in RAS-mutated and wild-type disease, and the importance of conducting genomic analysis for detecting targetable alterations in patients. First, can you review what the current options look like in terms of frontline chemotherapy for patients with pancreatic cancer?
When we think about advanced pancreas cancer, which is the majority of the patients will present with advanced and metastatic cancer. In fact, most patients at some point of their lives, unfortunately, will present with metastatic disease, regardless of the stage of presentation. We think about this disease as mostly micrometastatic from day one. So this is where having effective systemic therapies would make a lot of sense. Unfortunately, a lot of the chemotherapy options on hand have been largely, or I'd say modestly effective. So we have three chemotherapeutic options today for our patients with metastatic pancreas cancer: a doublet, gemcitabine, nab-paclitaxel, and then two triplets, FOLFIRINOX and then NALIRIFOX, which essentially is similar to FOLFIRINOX, except the irinotecan base is liposomal with a little bit lower dose of oxaliplatin. So when we think about, okay, how do I, and I should add, there is also a fourth, gemcitabine cisplatin, and that's only relevant if you have BRCA mutations or PALB2 mutations. So when we think about, if we think about the subgroupings of at point of entry for patients with metastatic pancreas cancer, we think about those patients who are non-BRCA, non-MSI high, which is about 0.3% of all patients. So it's rare to have an MSI high. And then the rest, for now, at least at the top, before we start digging into, other targets. So for those patients, say, with non-BRCA, I'm going to focus on those for 1 second. And this is the largest group. This is about 90-95% of the patients. If you include other HRD, you probably end up adding another 5-10% of the patients. So the overwhelming majority remains non-HRD, non-BRCA. For those patients, it looks like when we look at the overall data, that there's no advantage for FOLFIRINOX, say, over gemcitabine and nab-paclitaxel. That was now shown in a study called PASS that was presented at ASCO this year. It's a small study. It's a phase 2 randomized study. But nonetheless, it actually was striking in the sense that it did show that nab-paclitaxel and gemcitabine in the non-BRCA population may perform a little bit better, at least at par, but maybe a little bit better than FOLFIRINOX. And there was another study from Japan. This was not selected for BRCA, but it actually was powered to show that FOLFIRINOX was better than nab-paclitaxel and gemcitabine, and did not. In fact, if anything, nab-gem may have been a little bit better. Intriguingly, NAPOLI-3 with NALIRIFOX versus gem-nab-paclitaxel did show superiority for NALIRIFOX versus gem-nab-paclitaxel. So the landscape ends up being very confusing for those non-BRCAs. You have three options that are valid. Which one do you pick? Obviously, NALIRIFOX appears to be superior to gem-nab. FOLFIRINOX is not, but there's never been a comparison between FOLFIRINOX and NALIRIFOX. So if you come to choose at this point, patients who are not eligible for a triplet, we're going to go with gemcitabine, nab-paclitaxel, preferably every other week, as we published and others have published. That's an easier way to give it and remains effective with less toxicities. Or for those with a triplet, I'm starting to favor more using NALIRIFOX, although I still think there's a role for modified FOLFIRINOX. So I think it's a fair assessment. But we need to be honest with the fact that the only triplet that beat gemcitabine, nab-paclitaxel, is NALIRIFOX and not FOLFIRINOX for whatever reason. For those patients with BRCA mutations or PALB mutations, for those patients, I favor every other week gemcitabine and cisplatin. This is based on Eileen O'Reilly's work, but others as well. And we've published some with the every other week, showing that again it's effective and safer. But that could be an option, and the patients respond extremely well. And whether there's a role for PARP inhibitors in the maintenance setting or not, all depends, on individual choices. And for the MSI high, which is a very, very minute proportion of patients, and it's incredibly satisfying if you can find it, because those patients have exquisite responses. We've already published on that and others as well. You can have some really meaningful responses. Those patients I would go with first line, if you can get away with it, first line pembrolizumab.
I see. Thank you for breaking down the treatment decision-making there in terms of all the different options for this population. To jump to another topic, you were the author of a study investigating the molecular characteristics of and potential for precision medicine in patients with KRAS wild-type pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma. What does your research show about potential treatment strategies in this population?
Yeah, so when you look at the overall landscape of pancreas cancer, so it's broken down really into the RAS mutant tumors and the RAS wild type. The RAS mutant tumors are about, depending where you look at, it's about 90 to 93% of the patients. The others, the 7 to 10% are RAS wild type. And they provide different opportunities for targeting. The KRAS wild type pancreas cancers, which are less common, end up being very target rich. So those have BRAF mutations, some HER2 mutations, but also NRG1 fusions and other potential targets to go after. And why that's important, because we do have agents that we can match to these targets. For example, for BRAF V600E mutations, we have some data with trametinib and dabrafenib. There's an approval by the FDA for non-colorectal and all cancers that includes pancreas, and I've treated some patients with relative success. You can also use encorafenib, binimetinib, as well as another option. So this would be one portion. There are others as well, as I said, but one of the really exquisite targets, which is present, we think, in about 10 to 20% of patients with pancreas cancer that are KRAS wild type, are those NRG1 fusions that pretty much affects the HER2 pathway. But there's an agent called zenocutuzumab that has been developed in both pancreas and non-small cell lung cancer, but also others that may bear NRG1 fusions. Those patients with pancreas cancer had a fantastic response. I've treated a few patients with this on the study, and some patients have had remarkable responses that lasted for more than a year or two with zenocutuzumab. So this was presented widely. It's not approved, so you can't really, at this point at least, use it outside of a clinical trial. There are other similar agents that are being developed. I mean, you can imagine this is an extremely rare cancer, so it takes quite a bit to be able to get to the point where you can develop such an agent in pancreas cancer or others. But at least with the data that's on hand, you can see about 40-50% response rate, and some of these responses are quite durable. So very exciting. Just to lead on what NRG1 fusions, I mean, that they're clinically actionable targets. So NRG1 is a ligand that binds to HER3, which promotes HER2 HER3 heterodimerization, and then what we see is chromosomal rearrangements. That's the fusion part that involves NRG1. Is pretty enriched, as I said, in the KRAS wild-type pancreas cancer, and has a number of partners. I mean, not relevant perhaps for this discussion, but these fusion-positive tumors are sensitive to HER2, HER3-directed therapy, which essentially, you know, what zenocutuzumab does. So pretty exciting, I mean, to see these responses. Again, rare, but when you find them, it's incredibly satisfying to have been able to place them on a study that was meaningful for those patients.
And considering the prevalence of RAS mutations in those with pancreatic cancer overall, what other ongoing efforts aim to improve outcomes among those patients?
Yeah, so RAS mutations drive most pancreas cancers, right? You said 93% of them. And in all diseases, I mean, if you think about KRAS overall, it's the most mutated oncogene in human cancer. And directly inhibiting, because there has been a lot of approaches to indirect targeting of RAS through MEK, through targeting MEK and other pathways, parallel pathways. But direct inhibition is a desirable approach. The problem is this target, KRAS, was considered, quote unquote, undruggable for many reasons. It has a small binding pocket and a high affinity for GTP, triphosphate, which it needs actually to get activated. And there are also a lot of redundant mechanisms and post-translational processing that makes it difficult to directly target and have an effect. Now, the first signs of the dawn appear on the horizon with one specific mutation that we've worked with quite a bit is KRAS G12C. So unlike, say, 12, and 12C is one of the less common ones. So if you think about pancreas cancer and the RAS mutation landscape, so G12C is about 1% to 2% of all patients. 12D, like David, is actually 45%, is the one that's most represented, followed by 12V, like Victory, and then 12R, and then 12S, etc. So 12C is less common, but yet it became the one that's easiest to target, and primarily because of its interactions with its downstream effectors. So there's an active cycle between GTP, GDP, and GTP that essentially the way the receptor the way it cycles ends up being favorable for targeting. So this essentially, you know, led to a lot of work that has happened with KRAS G12C mutations across multiple malignancies, but in pancreas cancer, you know, with at least three agents and more coming as well. But three agents have been, or three or four have been the most advanced. But the two that are approved for other indications, but they are in the guidelines for pancreas cancer, are sotorasib and adagrasib. Both agents, you know, were looked at as single agents in pancreas cancer. Ultimately, I worked quite extensively with adagrasib, which I think is relatively, at least, you know, historically, when we look at the data with sotorasib and adagrasib appears to have a bit more of an edge. They were developed a little bit differently in terms of their pathways for maximizing the dose to move forward with. Nonetheless, what we've seen with pancreas cancer and adagrasib, that you can induce about a third of the patients to have a response. And when looking at the median PFS, it was about 5.4 months for those patients with pancreas cancer. So pretty remarkable for refractory patients. And I have a couple of these patients that have had responses for more than 18 plus months with refractory pancreas cancer. I'm quite exquisite when you see that response again. You know, again, unfortunately, most patients do not respond. And we're still trying to figure out, you know, mechanisms of resistance, what's driving resistance. I mean, we have some ideas and other agents that are being developed by a number of industry partners are specifically thinking about the problem of resistance and how can we combine, you know, a 12C with, say, a pan-RAS inhibitor, or with an on rather than an off RAS inhibitor, because we see some amplifications of 12C. So there are a number of agents that are coming down the pike that will elevate even further the activity of these 12Cs. Now, 12C is only a little piece of a big, big pie. And so we want to extend, you know, the breadth of these RAS inhibitors. And multiple strategies have been designed. One is, you know, you go after directly targeting individual mutations, so 12D, 12V, etc. And other strategies have really focused on these pan-RAS inhibitors, so, you know, which hit all the RASs. Now, when you look at face value, it continues to make most sense to go directly one-on-one rather than pan. Now, it's good to have the pan because we can't cover everything with direct targeting. So there are a number of G12D inhibitors that are being developed as we speak. I mean, last count I made, maybe 10 or more at this point of time at various stages of development. And we don't have any preliminary results for most, except we do have one that has been looked at. So RMC-6291 is an interesting agent, and that's essentially a RAS G12C inhibitor, but mostly on the on side. So the sotorasib and adagrasib function on the off RAS. This agent is an on RAS. Now, the cool thing about it is, although it wasn't looked at in pancreas cancer per se, yet most of the data comes from lung and colorectal cancer, what they found is that if you fail or you're previously exposed to a G12C inhibitor, you have the same opportunity to respond than if you didn't. So based on that, you know, a number of these agents are being developed. And that brings me back to, you know, the G12D inhibitors that are being developed. We're still waiting on at least the direct inhibitors, not the PROTACs. So to go back to targeting RAS overall, there are two major pathways to do it, either through direct targeting or through what we call proteolysis targeting chimeras or PROTACs. I don't favor as much the PROTACs because I don't think they inhibit RAS as effectively. I think the issues is with cycling and lifespan of the agent. So then now we zip back to G12D. So as we were talking about KRAS G12D mutations, which is found in about 35 to 40% of pancreas cancer patients, one agent that has been looked at, which is a protein degrader, so part of that PROTAC family, is ASP3082. And this one was looked at in a number of cancers. But with pancreas cancer specifically, the response rate was reported out at ESMO recently. That it was a little bit less than 20%. I think it was between 15 and 20%, but not as durable. So I think although that, you know, shows a proof of concept that, you know, all the efforts that are going after targeting KRAS G12D are worthy because you actually do have responses. The pathway is probably through direct targeting, which we're seeing a number of agents being developed in that space. So really exciting time. I mean, you know, think about it. For the longest time, it was a dream to target RAS. And, you know, there was a lot of work that has been spent trying to target RAS. And that dream is coming true. We're seeing more and more agents being developed rationally, understanding more mechanisms of resistance, curbing on these mechanisms of resistance. I want to finish this off with talking about the pan-RAS inhibitors. Again, another exciting development, and many reasons for that. So one of the leading compounds is RMC-6236, which is a RAS multi-on inhibitor. Again, these are on inhibitors. So other than KRAS G12C, it seems that the on inhibitors may have an edge overall for the other RASs. When looking at specifically pancreas cancer, with these multi-on RAS, excluding G12C, they've seen about 20% response rate, which tended to be relatively durable for many patients. Again, exciting, and for two reasons. One is this essentially is a way to blanket all RASs as we're developing these target-specific agents. And this is moving forward, by the way, now being developed into a randomized phase 3 study in refractory pancreas cancer. So that's moving on a fast path. But the other exciting piece about it is thinking about how to combine it with other agents that target directly RAS, because we know that one of the elements of resistance for RAS inhibitors is the appearance of other RAS mutations. And so when you combine them or sequentially use them, I mean, theoretically, of course, until it gets studied, with these agents, you curb on some of the resistance mechanisms. So very exciting time for RAS inhibitors. I think, you know, in the next few years, we're going to have a lot of areas to cover, which is great and exciting for our patients.
What are the next steps for research in the pancreatic cancer field? And what do you hope your colleagues take away from this discussion?
I think when we think about the landscape of pancreas cancer as it's emerging, and I'll put this in context for you, I think it becomes so important for us to move away from the nihilism of the past. And I was always optimistic about whether we're going to find a way for pancreas cancer and expand our capacity to treat those patients. And we're starting to see that. So part of the nihilism that I see sometimes in our community of oncology is we oftentimes look at those patients as patients that are tough to treat, that, you know, have few options in here and between. And occasionally we give up, I think, too early. I don't, but I see that sometimes. I think it's very, very important to ensure that every single patient with pancreas cancer, every tumor of every patient with pancreas cancer needs to be profiled for genomic analysis. Why? Because now we have all these targeted agents that are either making their way into clinical trials or hopefully making their ways into the clinic. So we've talked about BRAF-V600D mutations. We've talked about G12C mutations. We have agents already in the clinic that are covering. And we touched upon NRG1 fusions and the fact that there is an application for zenocutuzumab, and we'll see where that goes. But if that becomes available, that yet adds another layer for our patients. So we see a multiplication of these targets now. It's not in BRCA, of course, PALB, and others. So we're seeing so many targets now emerging in pancreas cancer that I think in some ways, it would be a relative malpractice not to profile all these tumors, and making sure that we're going to find every single one of them, MSI high, NRG1 fusions, RAS mutations, describing what type of RAS mutations, BRAF-V600D mutations, NRG1 fusions, I mean, you name it. So this is expanding the field. You know, my friend Mike Pichvain published a nice paper that showed that if you find a target and you're able to match it, you improve the outcome of those patients. We've also shown that as well. So I think that's a very different world we live in today for pancreas cancer. Yes, the chemotherapy questions are relevant, and we have now more data to tell us that we have the freedom to choose a number of agents and individualize. But I think most importantly, it is and needs to be clear. The message needs to be clear that for every single patient with pancreas cancer, we need to have assessment of inherited mutations, so germline mutations, because about 5 to 10% of those patients will have some alterations that may link to their cancer, and two, genomic analysis. Now, I want to emphasize also the importance, because we have these fusions that now we're going to be looking for more and more, that testing, so next generation sequence testing needs to involve RNA, an RNA NGS component. So not to miss on these NRG1 fusions or even the less common NTRK fusions. But there may be other fusions. I've found FGFR2 fusions, which I've treated with pemigatinib, and I've had some really satisfying responses for patients. So really try to expand from the DNA to include also the RNA so we don't miss on these rare fusions, which can be ROS fusions and others. So we know that they're there, but you have to really look for them. And if you don't check every single patient for these alterations, so let's say an alteration is 1 in 100 patients, right? So then not common. And we think, okay, you know, it's not common, so am I going to find it? Well, so just make the math. Statistically speaking, if you have one patient out of 100 having an alteration that I can match to, if you randomly do your assessments, it's going to become 1 in 10,000. So we need to consistently test every single patient so we can capture the 1 in 100. Now, the good news now is that when you put all these together, we're starting to probably cover close to 100% of patients with pancreas cancer with some kind of target. And that's huge. And that should not be forgotten at this point of time. So if I have any message for my colleagues and for my patients and for all patients with pancreas cancer is that, you know, that light at the end of the tunnel, we're there. We're seeing it now clearer. We have a lot more to offer our patients. We're working very hard on bringing all these agents comprehensively into the clinic, clinical trials and clinic. And I've never been more optimistic. I mean, I'm always the eternal optimist, but I'm even more optimistic today that we're going to move the needle for our patients with pancreas cancer and, you know, continue to enhance their likelihood of living longer, having better quality of life, or even increasing the level of cure for this cancer. At the end, a lot of these agents that are very active in the later stages of the disease need to start trickling back to earlier stages of the disease. We've done great work with chemotherapy and surgical resections and improvement surgical techniques have moved a lot of patients with early stage cancer into a cure, but not enough. And I think now we have to think about how can we bring a lot of these agents, targeted agents, to earlier lines of therapy to enhance even further the likelihood of cure for these patients. So a lot of work ahead of us. The certainly the future looks bright. We're chipping away one drug at a time, but I think now we can remove that whole concept of nihilism and pancreas cancer and look, you know, quite optimistic on the future. And finally, we're going to get there.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.